So one of the more interesting parts of Lech Lecha, which is of course a foundational parsha, the rise of Abraham, the spread of monotheism, the selection of the Jewish people, the first entry into Eretz Yisrael, and all the stories fit in some way, shape, or form, the story of Mitzrayim and Avram's inability to move the people of Mitzrayim. He gets caught in a lie, and Am Yisrael has to return for unfinished business. The story of Lot, unfinished business. Of course, Hagar, sequel to the Hagar Yishmael episode. His promises that he receives from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the beginning of the parsha, in the middle of the parsha. So everything fits. Everything is necessary. Everything has purpose and real utility in the parsha. And then there's this very, very long, extended section about the wars between these kings and those kings, and four and five. And so our typical way of reading it is it's pretty much backloaded, that there are two events at the end of the war that are necessary. One is Avraham redeeming Lot, Avraham's chesed, Avraham's commitment to family, and then this interaction with Avraham and Malkit Tzedek, which takes place in Yerushalayim. And this is a prequel to what happens in Parshas Vayera, where Avraham ascends to Yerushalayim for the Akedah. And there's some religious discussion going on between Avraham and this priest who's formed a community of religious people that resides in the city that would one day be called Yerushalayim. And everything else, maybe even Avraham's generosity, that he didn't want to take any of the money or any of the booty of war, the loot of war. But there's a lot of psukim describing the actual war and where the war was fought. And so there's a lot more to this war than those three backloaded issues that the war is just provided as a pretext or a context for the three important events towards the end of the war: Avraham's generosity, his redemption of Lot, and his interaction with Malkit Tzedek. So this is an idea based on several pieces of the Nitziv, but probably the most important part of it is that this is not a war of kings that Lot happens to become entangled with, that Avraham happens to engage with, that Malkit Tzedek happens to encounter Avraham on his way back from, that Avraham happens to display his generosity and his avoidance of greed when he refuses to take the loot, but that this is a war of ideas. And being that it's a war of ideas, it's directed at the man of ideas. That even though on the surface it looks like the wars are being fought for political reasons, it's really an ideological concern. And people are frustrated, upset, agitated, especially the four kings, by Avraham introducing values that will challenge their world order and will make life more inconvenient for them. And keep in mind, Rashi believes that Amraphel is really Nimrod, the person that flung Avraham to the Kivshan Esh. So it's not just coincidental that there happens to be a king who's ruffled by Avraham's religious revolution. It's the same person who was ruffled by Avraham's introduction of monotheism in Bavel. And this is structurally reflective of the age-old truth that anti-Semitism and hatred of Jews, and they were really after Avraham. At some point, their entry into the land of Israel, the fact that the war takes place over the entire country of Israel, it's almost as if they're looking for Avraham. Why does the war starts in the north and Dan, makes its way through Ein Gedi and the Stone Yam HaMelech area, worms its way all the way down south to Kadesh and to Seir. So part of the geographic sweep of the war, evidently, they're either looking to prevent Avraham from entering or from extending his presence over Israel, if they can conquer Israel and capture Israel, or they're looking for Avraham. In a very little way, they're looking for Avraham. And all this emerges from the Tziv because the Psukim suggests that the war was limited to the battlefield. All the loot that was taken, the women that were taken, were battlefield loot, but that these four kings who were victorious did not make their way ultimately to the cities of stone. So how in the world would they capture Lot, who wasn't a warrior, who wasn't a fighter? So according to the Nitziv, essentially they're chasing Lot, and they knew that if they hijacked, they kidnapped Lot, then they could draw Avraham into the war. And the real target was Avraham Avinu, and the real target of Avraham Avinu were in this case two ideas, and I'll discuss those two ideas in a moment. But this is the picture, overall picture that emerges from the Nitziv, and it's buttressed by the fact that in the end, Malkit Tzedek, who appears to support Avram's ideas, discusses ideas. He doesn't thank Avraham for the battlefield victories, for stemming evil. He sidesteps the war, even though he could very easily have been threatened by the war. For him, it's about the ideas that Avraham represents that are triumphant, and then he congratulates Avram and blesses Avram, gives a bracha to Avram. So this is the first layer of the Netziv. This is not an incidental war that happens to erupt in the land of Israel, that Lot happens to become entangled with, that Avram happens to be engaged in, but this is a war of ideas, and a war of ideas directed at Avram because he's the purveyor of these new challenging ideas. One of the two ideas. So I'll work a little bit backwards because the Netziv has an amazing idea, because Avram is very specific. He says, I don't want to take shoelaces, and I don't want to take straps. I don't want to take chutim, I don't want to take strings, and I don't want to take straps, strings and straps. Why is Avram being so melodramatic? Strings and just say, I don't want the money. So evidently, according to the Netziv, Avram's war was on behalf of two ideas that are represented by strings and straps, that strings and straps are a metaphor for. And Avram is in this idealistically. He doesn't want this war to turn out to be a war of financial, political, geographic. He wants this to be a war of ideas, and he knows, to a degree, this is my own comment, that if he takes money, then that will dilute the purity of the ideas he's battling for and the nature of the war and the way that they process the war. Rav Yoel ben Nun told me a story when he was fighting in the Six-Day War on the Mount of Olives in East Yerushalayim. So he was in a platoon, one of the platoons that liberated the Kotel. If you're listening to the share and you haven't read it, I recommend the book Like Dreamers. He figures prominently in the book. And at some point, they came, I think, to the hotel called the Diplomat Hotel, which had been abandoned by the retreating Arab armies. And they put down their backpacks and they rested the soldiers. They'd been in war for several days. So they just relaxed just to recoup their strength and continue this very, very tenacious battle. And at some point, there was a showcase with some expensive watches or jewelry, and one of the soldiers bashed in the glass. It had been abandoned. All the items were going to be, taken and looted anyway. And he took a watch, or he took some jewelry. Again, it was Hefker, so you could make an easy claim that it'll be halacha. It was mutter. But the commander of the platoon, who wasn't even from Jew, his name was Giora, got up and passionately pleaded with the soldiers not to take, because this was a war on behalf of Jewish history and a war on behalf of Yerushalayim, and if they started to get gold or jewelry or watches, then it would change their attitude, they would fight differently. And sadly enough, the next day, this Giora personality was this sergeant, this mythic personality, unfortunately was killed in battle, and there's a whole sub-story to that about how his family later contributed to one of the yeshivas in the eastern part of Yerushalayim, Beit Darot. In any event, getting back to Avram. So Avram says, I don't want this to be a war in which my agenda is compromised by the fact that I'm compensated for, because my agenda is captured by strings and straps, and those are his two agendas, and presumably at least one of them is what rankled everyone. The strings represent tying, unifying. You take a string and you unify two different elements. You tie them together. Avram was trying to unify the heaven and the earth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had retreated from our world because of the chait of Adam HaRishon and because of subsequent failures, and there was a split between heaven and earth. And Avram was trying to unify that split, make HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his hashkacha and his providence and his watchful eye and his treatment of human beings more intimate, more accessible, more tangible in our world. And I talked about this a little bit last week with Noach. Part of the problem with humanity was that they felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was just too distant and too far, and they couldn't identify HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their world. They believed in Hashem, but he was just a distant God and an angry God and a grotesque. They didn't feel his chesed on a day-to-day basis. If your only snapshot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when he punishes you, when there's a mabul, when there's a plague, then of course you'll have a profile of Hashem as chas v'shalom, as merciless and cruel. But if you feel only and you have a sense that Hashem is with you at every moment, supporting you, sustaining you, so even when there are moments you can't fully understand, you feel his intimacy, you feel his presence. And that had been missing from humanity. And Avram was trying to unify. There's a medrash that says that Avram repaired or mended the split. She'ichas olam. He mended the split between the heaven and earth. Is based on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Achos Lanu Ketana, we have a small sister, talking about Am Yisrael, but Chazal, in the Medrash Darshan, Achos Lanu Ketana, not that the word Achos means a sister, but it means Avraham, She'icha, Eskol Bo'ayi Olam, that he mended this rupture between Shemayim Varetz. Achos means sister, but the word Aleph, Yud, Ches, Hey means to sew, or to when an Avel closes up the tear in his clothing, it's Ichoy HaKerah, he covers, or he sews, or he knits, and he repairs and mends the rip in the garment. So Avram was Achos, Avram was a sister, because he unified Shemayim Varetz, and this is how how Malki Tzedek celebrates him. When Malki Tzedek encounters him, and before Avram, at least textually, before Avram refuses Melech Sdom's offer of war loot, he says, Avram, Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon, Kone Shemayim Varetz, you've made a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Kone Shemayim Varetz. And the Gemara in Bracha says that Avram was the first person to be Mamlech Hashem and the Shemayim Varetz. People were Mamlech Hashem, coronated Hashem, accepted his authority in Shemayim, but they were, it was very distant from our world, and people had a hard time feeling Hashem in our world, and Avram drew Hashem into this world. There's another interesting medrash that the Tziv explains on that phrase, Kone Shemayim Varetz, like a person will say, that person has beautiful hair and beautiful eyes. That's a strange medrash to describe a Kodesh Baruch with beautiful hair, beautiful eyes. Hashem doesn't have hair and eyes. So the Tziv explains that eyes are a metaphor for Hashem's attention to us. When Hashem says that I will pay attention to Eretz Yisrael, Tamid Einai V'libi, V'yuani V'libi Shem Kol Yomim, this is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises to deliver his Hashgacha, his care, through the Beis HaMikdash as a conduit for all human prosperity. So eyes represent Hashem looking at us, not looking at us, but paying attention to us. And the hair that stems and grows from our head represents that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will actually expresses itself and grows and delivers prosperity and health and whatever we ask from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Avraham, Kivayachal, turned Hashem into a being that people would see has beautiful eyes and beautiful hair. Hashem doesn't have beautiful eyes and beautiful hair. The language of the Medrash is in Mem Gimel Zayin. Rabbi Abba says, Ki inish damar plan enoi yoi sara yoi. Avraham was describing Hashem like someone would describe his friend, beautiful eyes, beautiful hair, of course. There's a well-known Shivas HaRashba at Chelek Hei, he said in Kuf Tesvav, that questions, how do you even apply this Medrash to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The answer is that Avraham was highlighting Hashem's Hashgacha and was highlighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in this world. And this is exactly what rankled those kings, because they didn't want Hashem to be too present in their world, because it's easier if Hashem's in Shemayim. It's easier if you feel that Hashem is far from you, and that allows, especially if you're a powerful person, especially if you're an abusive tyrant, so you don't want Hashem to be in your world checking you and halting your abuse. There's a God in Shemayim. You can bribe him if you need. Sometimes he'll come down. Sometimes he'll interfere. But basically, you've got the lay of the land. So they were rankled by Avraham's ideas, and in particular, the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being imminent in this world, and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha. I'm summarizing six or seven pieces of the Netziv on this section, of course, with my own framework. The Netziv also says this is why one of the battles took place in Ein Mishpat. Ein Mishpat, very strange word, very evocative word. Ein, of course, in Hebrew, is a well. And it's a well because when you're walking in Israel or anywhere and you see like this round circular well in the middle of nowhere, it looks like an eye is looking at you, like the word ayin. So this is the well of justice. So the Medrash says that they wanted to extinguish Avram, who was the eye of Mishpat. Basically, Avram described Hashem's presence in this world as imminent, the Hashgacha. Hashem pays attention to this world. He's not just in some distant heavens. And they didn't want that because that would also create accountability, right? If Hashem's present, obviously, Kadosh Baruch Hu is Baal HaRachim. Obviously, Kadosh Baruch Hu has mercy and pity. It makes Kadosh Baruch Hu, as we would say, more softer in the eyes of people rather than more frightening in the eyes of people. But also it carries expectations. If Hashem is part of my life, then every time I betray Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm betraying an imminent presence that's involved in my life. And it's a, as we would say, a slap in the face. If Hashem is distant, then every once in a while, every couple hundred years, he takes an interest until he comes down from Shemayim. I've got my own world, my own private space, my own private area of detail. So Avraham said, I don't want strings. Not like there were strings of gold that would be very, make him affluent and enrich him. No, he didn't. He one agenda he was battling for were strings. He wanted to tie together Shemayim Varetz, and therefore he says, I don't want money for strings. And the second agenda which the Nativ doesn't suggest rankled or braided the other kings, frightened the other kings, intimidated the other kings, but it's certainly, you know, one of the themes of this war, is just justice, to defend people, to defend the innocent, again, in the micro sense, to defend Lot, in the broader sense, in as much as the four kings were the aggressors, and it seems like they were, and they levied taxes, and they, and at least, ironically, Sodom and Gomorrah are the victims in this case. So Avram is defending life, Avram is defending innocent, weaker people, and Avram is creating a world of, and by chasing these kings, Avram is evicting evil. Avram is banishing evil, in particular, from the land of Eretz Yisrael. Again, it's not so obvious to people, unless you read the Pesukim carefully, that this battleground is completely in Eretz Yisrael. Namely, it doesn't take place anywhere else. A, B, it covers the entire geography, the entire map of Eretz Yisrael. So Avram says, I chased out these people because they didn't represent justice. It's not just that they believed in a world in which God was distant, but they believed in a world in which injustice, again, ironically, Sodom and Gomorrah, which would become the seat of injustice. In this case, they were the victims, and perhaps there's a message here that they had a chance to perform tshuva and they didn't respond. In any event, Avram says, that was my second agenda. And as my second agenda, I ran after these people. It wasn't enough just to defeat them, right? There's a lot of attention placed on the pursuing. The four kings were defeated by Avram. I'll just read the psukim for you. The Nisiv doesn't highlight this as much, but I think it's extremely relevant. What happened? The four kings flee from Kedol Omer and his band, and they capture Lot. Avram is involved. He defeats them. Vayirdof Adan, chases them until dawn. So, Vayechalek Alem Lailahu Vavadav. Then he splits his team. Vayakem Vayirdefem Atchova. There's a lot of chasing, not just defeating, a lot of chasing and pursuing. So Avram says, and presumably this pursuing is because of the ideas they represented of injustice and tyranny and exploitation. So Avram has to literally expunge these ideas from the land and from human consciousness. So Avram says, that's my second agenda, and I don't want to be paid for that. I don't want to be paid for my chasing, for my shoe straps, for the fact that I was running after them. I don't want to take money. I want these ideas to be clear, because not just in the eyes of other people, but in my own eyes, the purity of these ideas will be compromised if I'm paid for them. So it's an interesting set of nitzivs, and it reminds us to take a closer look at this parsha rather than just reading it as a setup for a couple important salient issues which emerge towards the tail end of the parsha.